Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Capaccio now on the Wester Hotline as we are exactly 2 weeks away from the NFL season opener between the Eagles and the Cowboys. Sal joins the show now on Bills practice yesterday, the 53-man roster, which we're under a week away from, and plenty more. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
I'm good. Are you taking in any of these other football documentary, the Cowboys one that's out, or is Hard Knocks whetting your appetite enough for off-season football content? There's the quarterback one, too. There's so many football things that are out there.
Yeah, that's so funny you say that. I was just thinking about it. Like, I can't catch up and do a lot of these things. I just don't have time, to be honest with you. I'd love to sit down and watch a lot more of it. I am watching Hard Knocks, obviously, because it's the Bills, and you know, it's something I'm interested in to talk about. We do a reaction podcast afterwards, but watched quarterback maybe last year or 2 years ago. Can remember now. Yana's watching it. She really likes it. In fact, she said to me she really likes Jared Goff after watching this. Like, and a lot of the stuff that he went through and did not know it.
Yeah.
What's
I felt the same way when I watched that quarter. I thought Jared Goff really comes off as like a guy you want to root for.
I have not watched it so this season, but she told me that she's been watching it. So I like that my wife gets into it and she's watching these things and like independent of me, like, hey, I've been watching quarterback. I'm like, oh, really? What's it going on? What's going on with it, you know, in this season? I have not watched the Cowboys. I will. At some point, I'll get around to that because that's like evergreen, right? You can watch that at any point. It's a historical perspective on something. So that's kind of like The Last Dance, right? They compared it to a little bit. I will go back at some point and watch that, I think, because it sounds really cool. And it was right in my wheelhouse when I was of a certain age where I totally remember a lot of that when Jerry Jones bought the team and fired Tom Landry and the backlash and how all of that went down. So I am very interested in that. I just haven't been able to watch it yet.
I've only seen clips so far. I probably will watch it because they are – I don't think I dislike the Cowboys maybe as much as Bills fans that watched the two Super Bowls in the 90s. Although I wonder how much hate there is still for them. The intrigue of some of those stories that – like, they just seem so foreign to football. The Michael Irvin stories from training camp, including the one at the barbershop, which is just like, what? This actually happened? They had a parade for Tom Landry after they fired him, where fans were like,
he was an icon. Icon.
Yeah. Like, imagine that today. I think they said 100,000 people showed up for a parade for their coach they had just fired. But, I mean, he had been there for so long that, you know. But that'd be like if New England had done that for Belichick. Like, the week after he's fired, we're all going to meet at the stadium to celebrate him. Like, you don't get that today at all. I don't know if you even got that then, if that's just a one-off instance of that.
I mean, yeah, I don't really know. It's crazy, right, to think about all of that. So, super interesting to think about all of that and to remember it and see it. And I want to kind of go and look through that lens of how they present it. But, no, and Hard Knocks, of course, you know, there's a couple – episodes left. They'll show this week's preseason game, and then they'll kind of probably lead you into, you know, what will be cuts on Tuesday.
Yep.
And that will then the final episode will show the cuts. I don't know exactly how much they'll show of that. It's been different over the years where there's been some criticism of these shows, Hard Knocks specifically, of, you know, showing these people in their worst moment of their life, at least their professional life, right?
Yeah.
And in these situations. And you know, there's been some, hey, let's have a little more empathy and just put it out there for entertainment value. So I'm interested to see how that works. But yeah, Tuesday at 4 o'clock, guys, I mean, we are here. I mean, it is, you got one more game here and then the Bills have to cut down to 53. I've been actually working on a projected 53-man roster and it's super interesting because there are, as always, you know, like spots where you're like, man, what do you do here? Do you keep this person or that person? And I find myself kind of probably with like two spots, I think. There's probably, at the end of the day, I think I'm pretty confident on most of it. Maybe like three, like 50 guys I can get to. And then I'm like, well, there's like three spots and I don't know how they want to massage what they're looking for special teams or at a certain position.
What would you say is the guy or the position that you're having the toughest time figuring out?
It's a good question. I think Tyrell Shavers is right there, figuring out if they want to keep five or six wide receiver, but he's in a, it's so, you have to really kind of be understanding of the nuance of it, right? Which is, and I think most people are, it's not Tyrell Shavers as a wide receiver necessarily. It's does he offer enough as on special teams that you would keep him over somebody else at another position, right? And whavever that may be. Or is Laviska Shenault someone who offers you more? Because he would offer you more on special teams.
Uh-huh.
He could return kicks. He can I don't think he returned punts, but he could return kicks. And he could actually play a little bit wide receiver. So you kind of have to kind of put those two first and kind of separate them and say, okay, then what do you do when you go against other guys at other positions, right? Like a Derek Forrest, I don't have making the team when I look at it right now, but he could certainly be a special teams player for you. But I look at the defensive backs, speak of him. That's where a real big issue is for me, guys. They kept 10 defensive backs last year. Like right now, I have them keeping 12. And I'm like, there's no way. Mm-hmm. They kept 8. I have them keeping 10. Sorry.
Okay.
They kept 8 last year. I have them keeping 10. And I'm like, I don't think they'll do that. And that's with Max Harrison going on IR to return. Like, I think that's going to happen. You know what I mean? So I'm talking 10 independent of him. And I'm just like, there's no way. That's too many. What do you do there? So is Jamarcus Ingram not a guy you keep? Or is Dorian Strong? But if you – the part of the issue I'm having is if you release Dorian Strong, he can get claimed by any team. And are you going to do that with a draft pick, like a fifth-round pick? I don't know if you can do that.
Right. They've done it with sixth- and seventh-round picks, but
a
fifth-round pick –
yeah, Prather's
Strong
already...
is fifth, right? That's what I remember.
Yeah.
I think Strong is fifth.
I'm pretty
–
I thought so.
And Prather, they've already waived injury design, right? It was an injury waive?
Yeah, so what's going to happen is if he clears waivers today
– he reverts back to the Bills, correct?
He reverts back to the Bills, and then he can't play for them all year anyway. He'll just get a redshirt year, so he won't matter.
Strong was a sixth-round pick,
he won't matter from the roster standpoint, but right, you're right. They've done that with seventh-round picks.
Strong was a sixth?
Yeah, okay. Strong was a sixth, by the way.
Okay, so Strong was a sixth. Okay, it could happen. Then it could happen. But that is something. If you think another team might – hey, we don't want another team to scoop him up. I mean, then you have to keep him on the roster. But you might not worry about that and say, look, I mean, there's guys like that. We could pick somebody up. So maybe you do waive Dorian Strong, right? So Jamarcus Ingram against Dorian Strong is something for me that I'm thinking about right there, to be quite honest.
Sal, Joe and I were talking about Larry Ogunjobi off-air as, like, we were like, okay, well, you know, Buffalo Joe, no, he's probably safe. Kid from West Point, maybe he makes a little run here. And immediately my brain went to, well, Larry Ogunjobi, because I know, like, they've got the numbers at defensive tackle right now. And I think it's going to be hard to keep everybody on the interior. Is he maybe – and Joe looked at the money. The money actually kind of makes sense for the Bills to potentially cut him.
Yeah, just real quick on that, because I looked, Sal, to see – like, okay, I've not thought about him being a bubble guy at all throughout this process. And maybe you'll tell me I still shouldn't. But his cap charges by year, whether he's on the team or not. Like, this year he's on the hook for a $4.1 million cap hit. And then there's three – this is all from SpotTrack – and then there's three void years. So it's a one-year deal, but they have cap charges for 4 years. If you cut them, you save $3.2 million of that this year. And then next year you have $2.5 million, but you're already spending that on the void year. So really, you'd be saving money, and then in there's two more void years after that you're getting rid of.
Well, hold on. I want to say something. I don't know if I'm looking at over the cap right now. This is one I'm using.
Okay.
I see a post-June 1 cut would be 2.8 dead money and a savings of 1.2 this year.
Okay, that's very different than what I'm looking at. So maybe we should I'll figure out what that looks like.
I don't know where you're looking, but you could be right. I'm looking at over the cap.
Yeah. And we're looking at
Let me look at SpotTrack and I can see, because I want to parse this out, because I think it's a great question, because what complicates the issue is his suspension.
Yes, right.
Okay, right. And that's a big difference that we just had between the two of us on, like, what you would be spending, because if it's 800,000 versus 2.5 whatever million, that's very different.
Yeah, so post June 1, they do have 3.2 savings on SpotTrack. I see that.
Yeah.
For this year. Oh, no, that's 2026 I'm looking at. That's why.
No. I got it.
2025.
Here.
You're right. 2025. Yep, 25. Okay. Yeah, I'll have to look at that. And I think part of it is because of the suspension. Here's where, and I am going to give some space to the fact that they could definitely move on from Larry Ogunjobi because they could save money. No doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But let's also remember, numbers-wise, as you're bringing up, Nate, they don't have to have him on the 53. He goes right on a suspended list. He has nothing to do with the 53-man roster, to be quite honest.
Would you think, then, if the move here is you put him on the suspension list, and then maybe you make a decision week 7 when he comes back and he's eligible to play at that point, it's, okay, we don't like what we have here, we're going to waive somebody, or Dwayne Carter has really stepped up, we like what, we're not moving on from him, now we can cut him. I guess they're not really behooved to make a decision on Ogunjobi at cutdown day, knowing he gets essentially a free spot for 6 weeks.
Correct, but the money could still matter before that, as Joe is bringing up, and that's where I think you have to figure that out. Also, here's something I'm glad you guys are bringing this up. I'll look into this if I can today. Vested veterans' base salaries are guaranteed if they're on the roster week 1. I don't think he counts because he won't be on the active roster.
Gotcha.
So there's some intricacies to this Larry Ogunjobi situation.
Correct. His suspension means a lot here for all of that.
Okay.
So the way it works, so everybody understands what I'm saying is, so if you're a vested veteran, you've been in this league over 4 years. If you're on the active roster, I think it's active or IR week 1, your base salary is guaranteed for the year. So, but in a case where he won't be, he will be suspended. I don't think his is, and I don't know when his becomes guaranteed, if that when he comes back. So I'd have to look into that. It's a good question. Haven't run into this issue before. But anybody that's part of why sometimes at the end of a camp, you're like, well, this guy has a high base salary. We like him, but you know, he's on. There's been times before. Do you guys remember? I think the Bills did this, believe it or not, with Patrick DeMarco 1 year. Okay, DeMarco 1 year. They released him for 1 week to start the year, and they brought him back at the second week. And the reason was because they didn't want to guarantee his salary for being on the roster week 1.
Right. So there's more with Ogunjobi because of the suspension. So we'll get more clarity on that. How about just the football part of it, Sal? Like, if there's been any buzz about what he's looked like positively or negatively, and then really just on the football and like what the position has looked like around him. Like, Dwayne Carter was inactive so often last year and still a young player. Reports about Carter, Walker, and Sanders, the rookies. Do you feel like the Bills have liked what they've seen at that position around the veterans?
I do, and that's why I do give space to. Well, I wonder if they would say, you know what? I know we don't have to. We can just put him on the suspended list, but we can also save money because I think that you've seen enough from the rookies, Dwayne Carter and T.J. Sanders. I'm sorry, Deion Walker and T.J. Yep. Sanders, to say that you like what you've seen, right? And they're going to have to play anyway, with or without Larry Ogunjobi on the Week 1 roster. He's suspended. He's not playing, so these guys are going to have to play anyway. And if you like what you've seen already, right? Maybe you go forward and say, you know what? And if we really need somebody, we can tap into the practice squad. Maybe Zion Logue is there, right? And guys that you could bring back in and sign that spot. So I do think it's really interesting. And yes, to answer your question, I think that they have probably seen enough from those guys to maybe feel confident. And I haven't seen Ogunjobi really do too much. I'm not saying he hasn't like been okay, but it's not like I'm not seeing him flash and be like, oh my God, yeah, wait till that guy is ready. Michael Hoyt's different. Michael Hoyt is that guy. Like, Michael Hoyt is making plays, and you're like, wait, man, they're going to be way better when he's back. He's going to help this defense. I don't think I felt that way about Ogunjobi. He's a part of a rotation, and that rotation, to me, these rookies are looking like they're going to fit right into it.
Sal Capaccio with us on the Wester hotline as we go through it a little bit, because we're under a week away from 53-man roster cutdown. Is there, you're kind of having to guess, I guess, at who's going to play against the Bucks on Saturday, but would you expect anybody that's like on the bubble, like, hey, this guy's got to perform or he could lose a spot? Maybe that's going to be true of a lot of players come Saturday.
Oh, sure. I think that that's what we're looking at cornerback.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, like I said, you're battling there, right? Maybe Dorian Strong, Jamarcus Ingram, Dane Jackson. are these guys in a battle? I didn't even talk about Dane Jackson. I have him out. I have him on the outside looking in right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like Dane Jackson to me is a great. He's the perfect vet practice squad guy. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
Like you put him out, you release him. No one's gonna pick him up. He'll be a free agent, and then if he agrees, you sign him to the practice squad. And then literally, like, it's a guy that totally knows your system. And let's say you're on a Tuesday or Wednesday and somebody's banged up. You say, we got to elevate him for the week. He knows the system. We can plug and play, right? Like, that's the perfect veteran practice squad. Is that a guy? How about a guy like Chase Lunt on the offensive line? He's in the same boat as Dorian Strong. Chase Lunt was a seventh-round pick. But do you feel like you need to – if you see enough from him, you keep him. If he puts enough on film, could another team scoop him up? They really like him. They like his size and his athleticism. He's got versatility along the offensive line, right? Is that a guy? Now, complicating that matter is Cedric Van Pran Granger. I think he will be staying on PUP. Like, to me, I think you go to Tuesday, he stays on PUP. You don't have to have a spot. So that opens up a spot for a guy like Chase Lunt. I think there's a few guys in this boat for sure.
When looking at some of the injured guys, Cole Bishop gets some reps last year after being on the shelf, and maybe we see him again on Saturday. What about Samuel for that? He's back doing some things at practice. Would you think that he's somebody to watch for just building reps for playing if he's out there on Saturday, or maybe that's for the 53-man roster, or do you think it's so early that maybe they don't play him at all?
I think he needs some reps. I don't know. It's a good question, though. It's a really good like needle to thread here for the Bills. And I think they're having the same discussion, Joe. I really do. I think they're having the same discussion about how much do we play him? Do we play him at all? Do we risk having him out there and getting injured? Now, one of the things is I think this week is a big week. If you feel that he got a lot of good reps this week, you might not need to do that, right? Because what are his reps anyway on Saturday? What quarterback is it with? Is it worth... Like, what's he getting out of it if he's only with Mr. Trubisky or Mike White, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's either playing with Josh Allen or he's not on the roster, right? I think we'd probably agree with that. So what benefit is it to be out there? You already have numbers. They, you know, yesterday, man, tough one yesterday for this kid, Grant Dubose, right? He just signs and he gets injured. But he's an example of you're going to rely on Deion Kane and Steven Gosnell and Christian Wilkerson. Like, guys like that are going to have to play some. So
a bunch.
You put Curtis, you put Curtis Samuel on the field, like, how much does it really benefit him in this situation? But at the same time, sure, like, dude, you've missed time, and we need to make sure that you're okay to play in games. They also have 2 weeks plus before their first game. It's a tough question. As I sit here right now, I don't know if I would expect Curtis Samuel to play on Saturday because I've seen him now playing in practice and doing pretty much everything in practice, and he has 2 more weeks of practice to do that.
Sal, I would imagine Frank Gore Jr. is going to see a heavy workload on Saturday.
Bet the over.
I'm not under the impression. I'm not here thinking that he's going to make the 53. I just think there's just too many. This is too deep of a room, and the roles are too entrenched, I think, in this running back room. I think like they would probably hope he'll get through to the practice squad again. Do you think that there's a chance that he ends up on someone's 53-man roster?
I do. I still think it's a low chance, though, Nate. And the reason I say it that way is that you always have injuries at the end of camp. You always have, you know, teams that look at the back end of the roster and go, boy, we just need something a little more or a little different. And he's put enough on film now, I think, for 2 straight years for a team to say, okay, let's do this. His dad, we all know who his dad is, but his dad is very involved in football. He knows he has a lot of relationships around the NFL. I'm quite sure his dad would love to see him on a 53. Although his dad is very much a proponent of him being in the Bills organization. That's why he's here, right? His dad wanted him to come to Buffalo and said, Brandon Bean is great and they'll take care of you. But at some point, I'm sure that, you know, like, hey, the kid gets a shot at the 53. Here's how it works at running back a lot of times, though, and we have to remember this. As much as this is what happens when you just watch kind of the Bills for a lot of people. And you watch the Bills, you see Frank Gore. Tyrell Shavers is in this boat, too. I'm going to put these guys in the same boat when I say this, which is you see them make plays, they excite you, and you're like, man, if you lose that guy, like if you release him, you know, that shame on you because somebody's going to scoop him up. Well, think about it from another team's standpoint, okay? Mm-hmm. They have to believe that guy is going to walk right on their roster and play. They can't just put him on the practice squad and go, yeah, we like him. Like, they got to really like him. And they got to like him enough, in Frank Gore's situation, I think even especially, to say, we like him even more than a guy that's kind of on our fringe that's been here with us all offseason. He's learned our playbook. He knows it. He's a guy we developed. Like, are you really going to put Frank Gore over that guy? Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? Because teams don't like doing that. It makes sense. Why would you do that when the guys come in and learn a whole new playbook? You have to put – remember, you got to put him on your 53. So now he's got to take a spot in a game day roster, even though he doesn't have to have a jersey, while he's learning the playbook, and he's probably not going to play, versus a guy that has been with you all offseason that you could probably do the same thing with or put on your practice squad and elevate.
I also just think that this also probably happens a lot with other teams every year, where a guy flashes in the preseason and makes big plays, and you think you've got something special there, when in reality, I bet every fan base has got two guys right now that they're yelling, our team needs... Who's the Bengal receiver that just made the two highlight catches on Monday? Tinsley. That guy is—he's like 26, hasn't played in the NFL at all, and was no one was thinking he would make the roster. And I guarantee you, what are Bengals fans probably doing this week? It's this guy's got to be on the 53-man roster, or you're going to lose him. And maybe you do, but I just think, Sal, that every team's probably got a couple guys like that.
I mean, honestly, like, you know who comes to mind here for this? Because people will know the name and it relates. It's Sean Dolek with the Rams. Mm. Sean Dolek's had an excellent preseason, but I'm reading things where he's still on the bubble for that team.
I saw Brian Baldinger did a breakdown of his, of like how good he looked. But right, like he still might not even make the team.
Right, we don't know. I mean, I don't think he's a lock. He might make the team, and that's great for him. And I hope Sean Dolek makes it. And, you know, I definitely think he should have been drafted. And I know a lot of people wanted him to be drafted to Buffalo. Mm-hmm. He's still on the bubble for the Rams. Read anybody that kind of covers the team. Like, yeah, they really like him, but is he safe? I don't know. He's listed at, like, their seventh linebacker, and now that's their depth chart. He played, you know, he's been getting playing time in the preseason. They don't play a lot of their starters. Mm-hmm. But that's a guy that's a great example of what you're saying, Joe. Like, and then all of a sudden, there's people in LA going, well, wait a minute, if you release him, like, any team can claim him. And maybe that's why you don't release him, because you think any team can claim him and he's put enough on film. So I agree with you. I think every year this happens with every fan base, and there's guys at the bottom of the roster. But we could also look at it in a really positive way here for the Buffalo Bills, which is, heck, guys, you probably remember, I remember, before this team got to where they are, there were probably 10 guys that were talking about that, right? Instead of two or three.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? And like, oh my God, you got to keep this guy. He's going to help the team. When in reality, those guys are just fringe NFL players. That's how many guys that the Bills had they were keeping at the back end of the roster. Here they have two or three maybe.
Right. There might be 30, 40 examples of guys we could bring up here. And maybe there's another one. The only guy I can ever remember that fits this profile, Sal, that went on to have like make a real impact in the NFL was Joik Bell. He was a preseason hero for the Bills, and he ended up becoming like a starting running back in the league for a few years. He wasn't like a Pro Bowler, but he had a couple good years in the league, and I can't remember any of these other guys ever actually doing anything.
The only other guy I'll bring up, and he only flashed for maybe most of 1 year, was Isaiah Hodgins.
Right. But like you said, that was one season and one season.
That's right. You're right, because Joik Bell actually went on to have a nice career, right? Joik Bell, think about that running back room that year. They had
He was
Marshawn Lynch, Fred Jackson, CJ Spiller, and Joik Bell on the same roster.
Right. Because
that's crazy.
They had to go and draft another top 10 running back.
All they had was running backs.
Really needed to draft an eighth overall running back. Yeah. Good pick there. Very quickly, Sal, as we run out of time here, we haven't mentioned anything from practice yesterday. You mentioned the Dubose injury, which is such a tough break.
Kincaid went down with like something too, right?
Yeah,
I just want to make sure. Like, I hope everybody, like, don't give that a lot of space, like, in your head, everybody. Okay. Dalton did get hit by Taylor Rapp on a ball. Rapp was just going for, and they collided. Okay, it happens.
Okay.
He was down for 1 second, like, slow to get up. They helped him up. He went over to the sidelines. He kept his helmet. He actually tried to run into the huddle. I saw this. He tried to run into the huddle, and like, nah, stay there. And basically ran, like, two more plays, and practice ended. And then I saw him walk off the field with Dalton Kincaid, Dawson Knox, smiling and talking. No trainers around him, nothing like that.
Gotcha.
Good.
And then, so the Grant Dubose injury, what did happen? It was a shoulder thing, because he got carted off, right?
He was in a one-on-one drill. There was a ball down the sidelines, and he tried to make a play on it. He dove for the ball, and his arm just kind of got caught under him. Oh. And it's just a real shame. It happens, right? And he dove for the ball, got caught, and he was in so much pain. You know, I mean, like, we were talking, media people, we were talking, and all of us were like, man, like, we've seen injuries, but you just feel so bad. Like, you could tell this guy was in so much pain, and he had just signed. He was in the hospital last year for a few days with a concussion playing mm-hmm. for the Miami Dolphins, and he's trying to come back to the NFL, and, you know, you just feel bad. And he went off to the side. Trainers came right over. They were watching him. They were looking at him. They sat him up, and then the cart came out, and they took him in. Later, I saw him in the field house with a trainer. He had a real big wrap, and it looked like a sling under the wrap. Yeah, you feel real bad for him. Joey Bosa had a vet rest day. Javon Solomon was back at practice. He was termed limited the day before. He had a big wrap on his right wrist, but he was practicing out there. And, yeah, it was a good practice yesterday. Real good work both ways. They did one-on-ones, you know, and there was some wins and losses by some guys. I loved – he had Kincaid against Bishop a couple times in one-on-ones. That was really interesting watching that, mm-hmm. You know, because those are the guys that went at it at Utah. And then they did red zone stuff, and I thought it was a real productive, good practice yesterday.
And you have some more details, WGR550.com. Extra Point Show coming up at 10. Thank you, Sal.
You got it.
Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline. When we come back, there was a comment made about Jim Harbaugh in the NFL.
Okay.
That I thought was interesting. I wanted to bring up. Somebody wants Jim Harbaugh suspended.
For his
in the NFL.
Discretions at the college game?
Yeah. That coming up. More on the Bills. Haven't really talked much about the secondary today, which planned to a little bit, as we did yesterday as well. Still no Gabe Davis signing, by the way. It's Joe DiBiase, Nate Geary. Jeremy is off today. This is WGR.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.